This is the Rocket, Bill Lassen. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have a lot of baseball to talk about today. We have Astros manager A.J. Hinch, MLB.com columnist Richard Justice, beat writer Jamal Collier, Richard Dubroff, and Jeffrey Flanagan. We start with Hinch, who tells us why the Astros are in sync. A.J., this team is off to a great start. And compare to 2015, how good is this Astros team?
Well, we're a lot more balanced than we've been in the past. And certainly, as you go around the league, I feel like we're a very balanced team compared to who we're playing. Now, the key in that is I think we have a good blend. We have some young guys, a young core. Everybody, when you talk about our team, you talk about Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa and George Springer as a lot of the guys that have been here in 2015 through 2016 and now. We've blended in a couple of veteran guys, McCann and Reddick and Beltran. Our pitching is stabilized, and what's come out of it is a very close-knit team that plays the game the right way. We win some close games, and we're off to a good start.
I've seen something that I've seen in God knows when, infield practice. And, I mean, with your young players, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're really big on preparation, and the players buy in that you have to do something every day to prepare yourself to play at this level. And when the players embrace it, you know, I have Alex Cora here as one of my coaches. Rich Dower has been in the league a long time. I've been in the league a long time. It's such a great marriage between players and coaches when everybody's on the same page.
Talk about your core. Your core basically were drafted a few years back, and that's amazing. And your team has one of the best records in baseball. Talk about that core.
You know, this group has won together. You know, in 2015, we learned a little bit about ourselves in winning, and that was the first time Jose Altuve had won, and Springer had won, and Correa had come to the big leagues. At the big league level, the expectation now has turned to winning. And when you have that mindset, you add some athleticism, you bring players in that have the same core belief system, and that core multiplies. And now instead of one or two players you consider a core player, now we've got five or six players or seven or eight players. It blends into the pitching staff, and you have 25 strong that believe in what it takes to win.
How good is it to have Beltran on this team? He's a veteran who can really help these young guys.
Yeah, it's huge. It makes me feel young because, you know, I played with him, and I feel really good about having guys like him on the team. But his presence is uncanny. And, you know, most of the time when we look at the performance of players, we look at the scoreboard, he's doing fine statistically. He hasn't had a monstrous week yet, but he's been very steady as a switch hitter in the middle of our order. What he does behind the scenes, what the tone that he sets for expectations and preparation in that clubhouse, the consistency that he brings is something that comes with time. And two decades is a long time to play in this league, and if it wasn't for things like that, I don't think we'd be where we are now.
I look at the pitching staff, and I'm not going to lie to you, I was one of them who questioned the pitching staff going into the season. But your pitching staff has been outstanding, not only the starters, but the bullpen as well.
Yeah, we carry 13 of them, and they're pretty strong. You know, when I can put in anybody in any inning and they're good with it, and they perform, that's obviously the key. But the tone was set by Dallas Keuchel, him coming back into dominant form, being a true top of the rotation type guy, set the tone early. Lance McCullers getting back from injury. And all that comes with Lance, the strikeouts, the bravado, the 95-96 that's back has been a nice tone. Charlie Morton came as a free agent, throwing in the mid-90s and is off to a nice solid season. But the balance of that is the bullpen, in which I can bring virtually four different guys can close, five guys can throw in the mid-90s. I've got one left-handed reliever, but a lot of my right-handed relievers can get lefties out. So it makes for a very versatile team.
Talk about how much the fans have meant to the team this year. It seems like you have a 10th or 11th man there.
Yeah, we do. You know, Houston's a really good sports town, and I think we've earned their respect with how we play, and obviously with the back-to-back winning seasons has brought the Astros' love back a little bit in our city, and I think we feel like we have something special. We've got a long way to go, but we've got a lot of baseball to play, but. Boy, is it better to get off to this kind of start than it is to play catch-up the whole season.
Compared to last year, it was really bad last year. And this year, you made it clear that you're not going to do that this year.
Yeah, we wanted to set the tone in April, and you can't always, you know, guarantee stuff like that. But, you know, coming out ready to play, the attention to detail, understanding that if we want to make changes in the results, then we have to go out and do it ourselves.
You have a tough division. And I know all the other teams are off to slow starts like Seattle, but you can't underestimate what they can do.
No, you can't. And we get to see them a ton, you know, and no matter who you play in our division, you're facing somebody who's pretty tough. We know each other. There's some bad blood among the division. That's fun for rivalries, but one thing we've learned, you know, we got off to a great start in 15. Texas came back and beat us and won the division. Last year, Texas ran away with it a little bit. It's unpredictable. And if you take a week off or you take a series off, this division will remind you that people aren't too far behind you.
I just want to say that I'm happy that you were able to get a second chance to manage this team. I didn't think you were given a fair chance in Arizona. That's my opinion. And it's good to see you get a second chance.
Thank you. Now, this is such a fun team to manage and be around. And, you know, I have one of 30 jobs. And I feel like I have one of the best jobs in baseball. I was hungry to do it again after the time in Arizona where we fell short and I was told to go away, but such is the nature. So you have to enjoy these moments where you have a good team, you have a good culture. I have a great coaching staff and I have a job of a lifetime.
Any improvements you like to see before the season ends?
Yeah, you know, we can tighten up our defense a little bit. You know, we've been a little inconsistent with our defense. It's one of the reasons why we work at it so hard. You know, obviously I've got to continue to play guys. I've got a 30 home run guy who's on the bench a lot in Evan Gattis. I've got Marwin Gonzalez who can move around the field. So I want to make sure that I utilize our bench. And most importantly, I want us to stay healthy. The key for this team, if we can keep them healthy, keep them fresh, keep playing good baseball, we'll win a lot of games.
AJ Hinch, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We stay in Houston and have a word with MLB.com columnist Richard Justice, who believes Mike Trout could be one of the best players of all time. High praise for a guy who's been in the league 6+ years. Enjoy the podcast. On the phone, I have one of the best baseball writers in America. His name is Richard Justice. He's a columnist for MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, glad to be on with you, Bill.
Richard, I've been reading a lot of your articles lately, and you wrote something recently about Mike Trout and his greatness. And please talk about how great Mike Trout is in your opinion.
You know, Bill, I think we've seen 5 full seasons of him, and we now understand this is one of the great players that's ever played the game. Even now, even after 5 years, he's 25 years old. He's never finished lower than the MVP voting. He now has a wins above replacement. Whatever you think of that number, it's somewhat of a litmus test. His wins above replacement at age 25, higher than Kirby Puckett, higher than Orlando Cepeda. And what that means is if his next 600 and something games are like his first 600 and something games, we're going to be talking about one of the 10 or 15 greatest players of all time. We're going to be talking about him in the same breath with Clemente and Mays and Aaron. That's how good he's been. And this hitting home runs in 4 straight games sort of brought that to light. Also brought to light, like, why are managers pitching to him? And he drew 3 walks last night. But I love that the fact that when he comes to your local ballpark, you can say, look, I didn't get to see Ted Williams play. I didn't get to see Willie Mays play. But I got to see this guy play. I took my wife to an Astros-Angels game last year, and I said, now, the Angels have the best player in baseball. Let me see if you can pick out who he is. Mike Trout didn't get a hit that night, but he got on base. He stole a base. He made a couple of plays in center field. It's amazing how many different ways he impacts winning. And the other part of him is his personality. I don't think he cares anything about the stardom. He's a gym rat, a baseball guy. In that way, I think he sort of takes after his guy, Albert Pujols, who just, you know, is a workaholic guy that's not much for the celebrity part of it, but does it.
Yeah, I mean, what seems amazing to me, the guy's so humble. It seems like he's on the radar. And, I mean, like, every time I look on TV, I see these commercials of Bryce Harper and other players, but I rarely see anything on this guy. And am I wrong when I say that? It seems like he's on the radar, but yet he's always winning these MVPs.
Yeah, he is. You know, I know he could do more. I'm pretty certain he could do more. I just don't think that's in his DNA, you know, when you talk to him about the greatest this, the greatest that. I mean, all he'll tell you is, hey, I just want to be the best player I can be. And just haven't been around him enough in the clubhouse, you can tell he's just about the game. You know, that was one of the things we said about Derek Jeter in the whole careers of Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Andy Pettit and those guys, probably 100 years of baseball in them. What was it, 5 World Series, 6, 4 championships, there was not one memorable quote between them. And the message was, what we do on the field speaks for us. And so Mike Trout is cut from that mold.
Wow. And you know, it'd be nice if we can get some players around him. This team has, the Angels anyway, haven't been that good really since he's been there. And I like to see them get some players surrounding him. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard when you don't make a bombshell free agent signing. I like what they did in the offseason, getting going defense with Martin Maldonado and Ben Revere, Cameron Maben, and especially your guy, Danny Espinosa. And I thought having Simmons, you have go up the middle, you have Maldonado behind the plate, you have Simmons and Espinosa in the middle and Trout in center, and then Maben and Ben Revere playing somewhere. You could do a lot of run prevention. But what it comes down to, they were going to have a hard time winning if they didn't get anything out of Garrett Richards. And I think he started he started one game so far, and I think there's some skepticism. I think they think he'll be able to pitch next year, but not this year, and I don't know that they have enough pitching to compete at this point, you know, in the American League West. Houston's a runaway train, but yeah, I agree with you. And then, you know, this is one thing that reminded me of when the Pirates got good a few years ago. It's like the whole country got to see that that Andrew McCutchen was a great player, an electric player, a guy that you went, oh my God, I can't believe the play he just made in center field. And maybe some of the October baseball kind of puts guys on the stage and lets us realize how good they are. Maybe that, hopefully that will happen for Mike before too long.
Yes. You wrote another story, the under-the-radar players who could make the All-Star team. And I found that very interesting. You had people like Marcell Ozuna, Ryan Zimmerman, Zach Cozart. Very interesting. Talk about that story.
Yeah, it's guys you don't expect, you know, and it's a reminder that you have to be patient sometimes. The success doesn't happen overnight. The Rays got Corey Dickerson and thought, hey, this guy's going to be an impact player. He hasn't been until now. And then he was hitting 340. His wins above replacements among the top among position players. Another guy, Eugenio Suarez, when he was with the Reds, I mean, when he was with the Tigers, they always thought the guy had a chance to be a really good player. And now you look at the way he's playing third base for the Cincinnati Reds, he's one of the best players in the National League. Miguel Sano is like that. You know, we come up a couple of years ago, he and Buxton, and we said, okay, this is two of the next great players. He went back a little bit last year. And his third season, they moved him back to third, which whatever you think of his defense there, that's where he ought to be playing. A guy like Jed Jerko, you know, he only got to play third base for the Cardinals because Johnny Peralta got hurt. And he's been fantastic. And you know, I guess the guy that you're probably most happy about is Ryan Zimmerman. He's finally healthy, and he's just, I mean, what he's doing is amazing. He's made that lineup in Washington a good lineup. He's made it really good, and it's incredible. It's fun because we know what kind of guy he is. He was the face of the Nationals before Strasburger and Harper arrived, and he is back having it. Wouldn't it be great if the Nationals had a great October run and Ryan Zimmerman was in the middle of it all, happy and all of that? So yeah, it's fun to see those guys. That, you know, they come from different areas. Some are young guys. Some are guys that have had some frustrations in their career and all that, but to see them flourish.
Richard, help me understand this. The Mets bullpen is awful. Everyone talks about the Nationals bullpen. The yeah. Mets bullpen is worse. Help me understand this. Everyone expected them, the Mets, to be contenders. They're not even close to that. And part of the reason is their bullpen. It's terrible. Talk yeah. about that. How do they get better?
Yeah, and I think everything's connected to every other little thing. For one ball, Familia's on the DL with a shoulder injury. You know, Lugo has a sore elbow. And also when you have Syndergaard out and Matt's out and Matt Harvey pitching to his ERA, a 5-something. So now you're taxing the bullpen. You're not getting what you hoped, you know. And you're right. Some of those guys like Robles and Fernando Salas, they just haven't been good. How you do it, I think you just keep going out there and you're hoping you can find a combination that works. But with the starters not going deep into games and with the starters not being effective, either being injured or effective, it puts a lot of strain on the bullpen. And I know I was talking to a manager a couple of years ago that had a real hot reliever, and he goes, we're going to send this kid to the minor leagues because I'm going to overuse him because I have so many guys not going well. that you want to go back to your hot hand. So it just ends up, you know, what we've always known is that a season reveals every strength you have as a club, but it also exposes all your weaknesses, and that's what we're seeing with the Mets. I really believe it begins with the starting pitching, but it's been pretty tough to watch because we had such high hopes for them.
Correct. And, you know, you talked about this earlier. The Houston Astros are a runaway train. And, Richard, I saw something I couldn't believe Sunday morning. I saw the Astros take infield practice. And I said, whoa, you rarely see that anymore. And I'm impressed by what I've seen from the Astros. I think they could really win this division if they keep it up.
Yeah. You know, Jim Crane bought the team in late in 2011, and he hired this guy from the Cardinals, Jeff Luhnow, who had done a great job drafting with the Cardinals. And he said, I'm gonna give him the patience and the resources to do this right. And I think a lot of baseball people were skeptical. You know, you're not going to be patient. You competitive people like hate losing, and in the 100 lost seasons will stack up. But what Jeff Luhnow did and what Jim Crane gave him the patience to do is they drafted Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers. They allowed George Springer the time to develop. They drafted Alex Bregman. They helped develop through pitch usage and Greg Pitch and Coach Brent Strom, Dallas Keuchel into a Cy Young Award winner. And so they make the playoffs 2 years ago. They would have made the playoffs last year had Lance McCullers Jr. and Dallas Keuchel been healthy. What's happened in the offseason is their payroll went up about $50 million. And Jim Crane told Jeff Luhnow, you need some veteran guys, some gray beards, go get them. And so they go out and they go trade for Brian McCann from the Yankees. They get Carlos Beltran. They get Charlie Morton and Josh Reddick and Nori Aoki. And they're a completely different team. They have great energy. Their bullpen is good. Their rotation has two dominant starters at the top. And they have the deepest, our Statcast people say it's the deepest lineup in baseball. They don't have anybody hitting 300, any of the regulars hitting 300, including former batting champ Jose Altuve. But every out is tough. The only thing that could go wrong, the division looks winnable. You know, they have an 8-game lead going in as we're speaking, is that they probably, and there are probably two dozen of the teams saying this, they probably need one more starting pitching. They have a deep farm system. They couldn't stomach the cost for Jose Quintana in the offseason. Would that change? Would the Pirates make Gerrit Cole available? Would the Rays make Jake Odorizzi or Alex Cobb available? So I do think they're going to be aggressive to try to add one more starter and in a perfect world, a left-handed reliever. But they're a team without many weaknesses right now.
No question. Richard Justice, one of the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
The Nationals are in first place in the NL East without having a quality bullpen. We spoke to MLB.com's beat writer Jamal Collier, who tells us why the Nationals have a big lead in the NL East. Enjoy the podcast. I have one of the best young writers in baseball today. His name is Jamal Collier. He covers the Washington Nationals. Jamal, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Jamal, the Nationals have a significant lead without a bullpen. And when I say significant lead, it's in the National League East. And can you explain why they have this lead without a quality bullpen?
Yeah, it's the bullpen, I think, is really the only kind of flaw or the kind of Achilles heel on this team when you look at the way they start with the lineup. I mean, 1 through 8, they've been the best offense in the National League and in baseball so far. I mean, it starts with Ryan Zimmerman and Bryce Harper. Zimmerman's kind of been a bit of a career resurgence after, you know, a couple years of down seasons the last 3 years. He's right now had the best month of his career last month, and is off to one of the best starts of his career. You look at what Bryce Harper's done. He's at his MVP level in some ways better than when he was the MVP a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it starts with those guys, and just really they're kind of clicking on all cylinders on offense. You know, the starting pitching has always been their strength, Bill, and this team, when they've been to the playoffs the last couple of years, have really relied on those guys to kind of carry the load. They've been there so far. I think they have, if you take away that Jeremy Guthrie start, where, you know, he had to give up 12 runs and got two outs, but you take away that start, and they have the second-best ERA starting pitching-wise in the majors. So, I mean, those two areas are so strong right now. They've kind of been able to get by Despite the fact their bullpen has definitely struggled here to start the season. But, you talk about the 8-game lead so far right now in the NL East, and they have the best record in the National League and one of the best records in baseball. So a lot of things to like about this Nationals team right now.
You seem stunned. Every time I read your tweets, you seem stunned that Ryan Zimmerman is doing the job. But why are you so stunned? And, it seems like health has been the issue with him.
Yeah. I'll admit, I did not see this coming. I mean, he has been even better than what he was when he was healthy. I mean, this is a guy who's a kind of a notoriously slow starter just from the beginning. I mean, he's a guy who would normally take some time to get himself together. And he not only started off hot, but he was hitting 400 for the better part of the end of the month, hitting somewhere around 420. I mean, it's just amazing to see what he does every day, and even his outs are loud. He's hitting the ball hard to all parts of the field. And he's really, like you said, not only looking like the best version of himself when he was 25 or 26, but he looks like, he's even improved in some of those. And health has been a big thing for him. I mean, it's what he continues to point to, and the fact that, not only was he, is he healthy right now, but he was healthy during the offseason. So he wasn't necessarily recovering from any injuries. He wasn't having to nurse or rehab or play through any nagging things to kind of get through himself. Through workouts, he was able to have a full workout, have a full offseason, have a full spring training, play as much as he wanted, and really not be hindered. So I think that's just been so huge for him to be able to be on the field and to be, not dealing with anything as well. And it's, it's certainly helped this team. I mean, when you talk about the lineup anyway, it had a chance to be dangerous when you got a guy like Trey Turner at the top, Bryce Harper, and Daniel Murphy. But when you add a bat like Zimmerman, in the middle, in the way like him and Bryce Harper, I think are at or near the top for almost every single offensive category. It's kind of amazing to watch just how good those two guys have been at the top of the order, the middle of the order.
One guy who's been under the radar is Michael Taylor. He's really been hitting the ball. He's proven me wrong. I thought they needed to get a center fielder, but he's been doing the job. And talk about the job he's done.
So Michael, he has been playing pretty well, and I think that even when he's kind of run into the strikeouts, are always his thing that he's got to kind of try to manage. And he's a guy who is just gonna strike out. I mean, it's just kind of the way his game is, the way his swing is. The biggest key for him is to, when he gets into a little bit of a funk or starts striking out a little bit, to kind of cut down on those and not let them snowball and turn, maybe a 1-for-5 day into, 2 or 3 or 4 days of kind of a strikeout stretch. And I think that he's done a good job of that. He has kind of pointed to the fact that he knows he's a center fielder right now. And the fact that when you're playing every day, it's, you don't feel like you're up there and every at bat means so much because I have to play for my job and I have to hit a home run right now because if not, I'm going to be on the bench. So when you know that you're going to be the starter and if you have a bad day or a bad couple of games that you're still going to be in there, I think that does help. And it's helped him so far. He definitely said he's made a little bit of adjustments as well, trying to slow things down. He's a guy who has let things snowball on him in the past. So, the biggest thing for Michael Taylor, I think, is this lineup is so good, 1-7, that if you can hit him eighth, if you can kind of, I don't want to say hide him necessarily, but if you can hit him eighth, he's going to get some fastballs to hit for people who don't want to walk him in front of the pitcher. He's going to get a chance to drive in some runs when some guys are going to be on ahead of him. And for him, he's such a good defender out there in center field that that anything you get from him offensively is going to be a plus at this point. So, so far, so good. I mean, he's in the last couple of weeks, I believe, hitting somewhere around 300 since Adam Eaton has went down with the injury. So it's a bonus right now. Anything you can get from Taylor offensively and defensively has been pretty good too. So good start for Michael Taylor so far, Bill.
No question about it. Yeah. Now, Jamal, I'm sorry, but the way this bullpen's constructed, you're not going to win. I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's Matt Albers, Jacob Turner. I don't care who it is. They're not going to win with this bullpen they have now. Now, the good news that they called up Eric Fetty, he's going to be part of the bullpen. I think he's going to be a big help. What do you think he's going to do, and what do you think about this bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, the way the bullpen is currently constructed, you're right. They definitely are going to need some reinforcements in there before they can, before they get to the postseason. And if they want to go somewhere, they obviously have high goals to get to the World Series and go far in the playoffs this year. And I think that this bullpen right now is not going to be good enough to do that based on what we've seen. The good news is, one, it's still early. still May something. You have a lot of time to kind of to find not only improvements for the trade deadline, but we saw what they did last year, Bill, when they got guys like Martin Szczepanski. They picked off guys off waivers and stuff. So there's going to be some arms. Maybe not necessarily you have to pay for some prospects to get some kind of closer in here, but you know they probably right now need at least two or maybe even three different pitchers in here, not necessarily just the closer. Mm-hmm. I think that you can look at, on one hand, guys like Sean Kelly and Joe Bland. These are guys who have got track records in the majors, and they are not pitching to that capability right now. You think that at some point, I mean, they're not going to finish with ERAs to start with 8 and 9. So they're due to start pitching better. Same with Blake Treinen. He's a guy who right now, I believe, has an ERA at 7 or 8 or something, and he's going to be better. He can't be that bad for the entire season. So you're looking for some improvement there. Cody Glover's been pretty good at times. He struggled a little bit in obviously some time with DL, but he's a guy also you think that is going to be a competent arm. So if you've got a kind of a core in there, Andy Romero looked good in some outings as well. So when you piece those guys together, you maybe add two arms or so in there. You can get another kind of mid-relief option and one more guy, potentially to lock down a ninth inning. Then all of a sudden you start to find a bullpen that can potentially go somewhere in the playoffs. But, like you said, the good news we talked about earlier is they have a big lead in the division. They're off to a great start right now, and they have some time to try to figure these things out. So wait for Kelly and Blanton and Treinen to figure out some things and get themselves together for the rest of the season. And sometimes go ahead and make some moves. And like you said, Eric Fetty, moving him to the bullpen is a move I'm very in favor of. If you need him to come in and help you this year, similar to what we saw with Trey Turner last year, where they've got a guy who's got talent, let's go ahead and fit him to our need. And then it's not good, he's not going to be a reliever maybe for his whole career. But right now we're trying to win a World Series. Let's try to, we have to do what we have to do to get there. So, I think, yes, at this point right now, the bullpen has got some improving to do, but they still have some time to kind of sort things out.
Jamal, you would think the Nationals are sick and tired of being one and done in the postseason. And I got to ask you, how can they go past the first round? Because, in my opinion, the 2014 team was their best team. But they got to do something now. I mean, Baker, obviously, this is last year of his contract, and he wants to get past the first round. I mean, can they do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you look at the way the National League is right now, and the teams who you thought would be there are struggling a little bit. The Cubs are around 500. The Dodgers are, I believe, chasing the D-backs and the Rockies in the division. The Mets and Giants are a mess. So you look at just the National League right now, and it's definitely not as strong. That's not to say the Nationals should be hoping that everybody else, kind of comes and stays back in the pack. Those teams, are still going to be there at the end of the year. Like the Dodgers and the Cubs, those are still really good, talented teams that I have confidence that'll make the postseason. But, I think that on one hand, the Nats, even with the issues they've had, they've been able to kind of jump ahead of the pack a little bit. I think the biggest thing for them is going to be shoring up their bullpen and to make sure that they don't go into the playoffs with that being a huge question mark. And if they can get some relievers in here, not only to pitch the ninth inning, but again, to help you to have some setup, man, to have some guys who can do different roles and to be productive and be valuable and pitch and get big time outs for you. I think that's going to be important. It's going to be important to be healthy. I mean, if you have Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg at the top of your rotation, I mean, that's as good a 1-2 as probably anybody in baseball. And I think that's going to be a huge thing. If you can have especially a 5-game series, you can potentially have those guys, pitch 3 of the 5 games or 4 of the 5 games. Again, that's a tough. It's tough to beat those guys. So I think that that's gonna be the biggest thing. I mean, if they can get through healthy, they can keep Ryan Zimmerman healthy and playing at this level. You can keep Bryce Harper healthy and playing at this level. They're gonna have a shot. The playoffs, of course, are a bit of a toss up at times. You just kind of like that series against the Dodgers. I think was a very evenly matched series that they could have very easily won. But the Dodgers kind of just pulled away at the end because they got some efforts from guys like Kershaw and such that, kind of require more. Kenley Jansen comes in the seventh inning and so on. So this is a chance to be their best team, Bill. I think that, talk about the 14 team, but if this team, especially this lineup, is probably their best lineup, is you can put Max and Strasburg at the top of the rotation. They haven't had that for the playoffs yet so far. I think that could be good. So if they kind of get this bullpen figured out, this could be their best shot to really make a deep postseason run.
And Dusty Baker's done a hell of a job. And so far, you know, I know it's early, but he's got to be the leading candidate for manager of the year. He's done a hell of a job.
Yeah, he's definitely got to be up there so far. I mean, again, just trying to manage, whether it be managing some of these guys' health, managing Ryan Zimmerman and such. It's still early, still only about 6 weeks in, but he's got to be in their short list.
Jamal Collier, listen, thank you so much, and have a great year.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill.
We go to Baltimore, where we caught up with beat writer Rich Dubroff, who explains why Orioles manager Buck Showalter is a genius. Enjoy the podcast.
My guest is Rich Dubroff. He is a beat writer for PressBoxOnline.com. He covers the Orioles. And Rich, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Rich, I spoke to a scout this week, and the conversation went like this. Is Buck Showalter a genius? And the scout responded by saying, the guy has been doing the job, smoking mirrors. I don't know how he's doing it. And I want you to talk about how much of a genius Buck Showalter is. I think it's a miracle what he's done. And because he doesn't have any pitching. And somehow they're winning. And how's he doing it?
Well, he's doing it by maximizing all the players that they have in the system, realizing that it takes a 40-man roster and maybe more than that to win games. You know, he decided early in the season, because of all the off days, the Orioles could get by with six relievers. Mm-hmm. And over the, you know, the past few days, last week, they've struggled with the bullpen. But having the extra bench player worked out really well for them. So, and he's used a number of different players already, and he's going to continue to. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them use 50 or 55 players by the end of the season, because they have a very aggressive general manager in Dan Duquette, and you know he's provided a lot of different options for Showalter. You know, the pitching isn't great. Although some of the pitchers have been really good. I mean, Dylan Bundy has been wonderful. The other starters, not so much. And as I said, until the last week, the bullpen has been tremendous. But it's stumbled a little bit. And Showalter's really good at maximizing, you know, the guys in the lineup, picking out the guys that that he thinks will do the right thing at the right time.
You know, entering this season, I thought what Buck Showalter did with the Yankees was really amazing. But what he's done with Baltimore since really 2012, wow, man. I mean, how much do you enjoy watching Buck Showalter manage?
Well, what I really enjoy doing besides watching him manage is being around him, because, you know, he's a very, very engaging manager. He loves... You know, unlike a lot of managers, he enjoys engaging with the media. He doesn't look at it as, you know, a negative part of his job. He enjoys, you know, the give and take. And you always learn something from him. He's always saying some you know, interesting and unusual things that maybe you hadn't, you know, heard before. I mean, it could be very simple. Players will come to him and say they want to play more. You know, if you played me more, I'd do better. And he says, no. It's the other way.
Yes.
If you play better, I'll play you more. And so there are all kinds of, you know, little things about Buck that are just really, really fascinating when it comes to baseball. And he sees, you know, players that may not, you know, be really good for other teams, but he can find a use for them.
Can the Orioles keep it up? You know, right now they're battling with the Yankees, and they're battling with the Yankees, and it's been a good battle so far. Can they keep it up?
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard unless the pitching gets better. You know, they need more innings from the starting pitching. That's that's clear. You know, they need more innings from Wade Miley. They need more innings from, you know, Ubaldo Jimenez, who has been good at times. You know, he's going to start on Wednesday night. And they need him to be better.
Why is he still on the roster? I mean, I know he had a hot flash, you know, late last year, but still, as an Oriole, he's been inconsistent. Help me understand that.
Well, first of all, he's being paid $50 million over 4 years. This is the last year. Right now, they may not have a better fifth starter than Jimenez. And he has been good at times. You know, he hasn't been a total disaster. People have sort of portrayed him as this awful, awful signing. He is underperformed, but he has not been, you know, a total disaster. There are times, particularly last year, you know, the last 2 months of 2016, and he was really, really good. A couple of times so far this year, he's been really, really good. But he's sort of been a polarizing player to a lot of fans, although he's always been, you know, terrific with the media. Right. And has been honest about his, you know, his shortcomings. But until they have another starting pitcher who they think is, you know, going to be measurably better than he is, and he consistently fails to perform, you know, he'll be in the rotation for the duration.
The trade deadline is coming up, and what chips do the Orioles have to maybe get that quality pitcher?
Well, that's going to be hard. You know, they have some young pitching. They have some sort of okay pitching in the minor leagues who others may think have potential. A guy who's not done real well in the majors but has a big time arm is Mike Wright. You know, right now his path to the major leagues, except for, you know, being a stopgap, seems to be blocked. They have him. They have some, they have some decent position players starting to come through the system. DJ Stewart, who is who was their number one pick a couple of years ago, is playing decently at Bowie. He's an outfielder. And then I have some other stuff in the lower minor leagues. You know, Duquette has aggressively traded over the years, and he's been a win now kind of guy. And I think that philosophy will continue this year.
Give me an injury update on Zach Britton and Gabriel Ynoa.
Okay, Gabriel Ynoa has a hamstring injury. He's close to returning. He's been with the club. Did not go to Sarasota to rehab, and will maybe pretty close to having a rehab outing, and isn't far from returning. Zach Britton, who's a sore left forearm, put him on the disabled list, for a few weeks in April, has obviously a recurrence of that, and he's going to be out probably 6 to 8 weeks. I think the Orioles will be fortunate to have him much before the All-Star break. And that's really hurt them, especially in the last week with the bullpen issues that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I was at the game when they blew that big lead against the Yankees. That was unbelievable to watch. So
there was another one that was almost unbelievable last night in Detroit. Yes. I wasn't with the club for this trip, but watching on TV, it was pretty amazing seeing them give up 11 runs and still managing to win.
No question. Listen, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll do it again.
Okay, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
We go to Kansas City, where we caught up with MLB.com's Jeffrey Flanagan, who talks about why the Royals are struggling this year. Enjoy the podcast.
On the phone is Royals beat writer Jeffrey Flanagan. He works for MLB.com. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Jeffrey, 2 years ago, the Kansas City Royals were the world champions. Now it looks like this team is going to break up by the trade deadline. Tell me the atmosphere going in that clubhouse this year.
Well, I would dispute the fact that they're going to break this team up. As a matter of fact, I just did a story yesterday. Dave Moore is pretty adamant that he owes it to this core to give it one more shot. Now, of course, if they're 20 games under, come July 15th, you know, he'll have a change of heart. But they've got basically five potential free agents going into next after this season. And I still suspect, too, that he also will try to sign perhaps at least two of them. So there's not really going to be a fire sale, so to speak. You know, he may, if they're out of the race, I think he might deal a couple guys, take a draft pick for the other one, and then try to re-sign a couple guys. So it's not going to be quite as extreme as maybe some of the national media think and, you know, some of the panicky fans here. But right now they're six games under as we speak on Wednesday, and actually only four games out of first place. So fortunately they're in a division that's kind of topsy-turvy, and they're going to, you know, they're committed to trying to get into another postseason.
Who are those free agents you think they will re-sign?
Well, the one that makes the most sense right now to me would be Jason Vargas, who is finishing up a four-year deal right now. He loves Kansas City. He loves playing for the Royals. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball right now at 1.01 ERA. And a year and a half removed from Tommy John surgery, all the reports are obviously he's very healthy and very effective. And it would give them a front four pitching rotation that would look pretty good. It had Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, Vargas, and Nathan Carnes has been a very pleasant surprise, who they got for Gerard Dyson from Seattle. So that would make sense. And then it's kind of a toss-up, you know. I think Eric Hosmer, if he continues to hit as well as he has in the last few weeks, he's probably going to price himself out of the Kansas City market. They might have a shot at Mike Moustakas. Maybe an outside shot at Lorenzo Cain, although, to be fair, Lorenzo does get hurt quite a bit, so I'm not sure. Risk versus reward, that's a great deal. Probably the cheapest one would be Alcides Escobar, a shortstop, who still is a tremendous defender, but obviously not much of a threat offensively, and they don't really have a great solution right now at shortstop to replace him. Raul Mondesi is their top prospect, but he struggled in his call-up this year. His call-up last year struggled, too. So there's a shot they could sign him for a pretty affordable price.
You know, it seems like Hosmer and Kane are really the only ones who've been consistent at the plate this year. And it seems like the team, the Royals, need to improve offensively. Is that true? What do you think?
Absolutely. That's, you know, until the last week or so, they were the worst offensive team in all of baseball, and it wasn't even close. They were on a historic pace for futility, and it picked up recently. They've been averaging over five runs a game the last eight games, so some of the guys are starting to come out of their funks. They moved Alcides Escobar to the top of the order, and he, arguably their worst hitter, and they did this a couple years ago, and it worked then, and it's starting to work a little bit now, but they still need guys like Alex Gordon to come out of his funk. He's been in a funk for over a year now. But Salvador Perez is hitting the ball. Whit Merrifield is starting to hit the ball. Brandon Moss is starting to show some signs. Even Jorge Soler is starting to show some signs offensively. So they're starting to come out of those offensive doldrums. Unfortunately for them, there's oodles of time since we've got over 120 games left.
What's the fan reaction to what's going on with Kansas City? It looks like they're still coming to the park.
Yeah, attendance is a little bit down. They did draw over 30 last night. The Yankees are in town. But they're still going to be on a pace for over 2 million in attendance, which, you know, maybe around the rest of the world, that doesn't sound like a ton, but that's still a lot for this market. So, yeah, attendance is a little disappointing this year, but I think after the last three-year run, people are just probably a little bit exhausted, maybe emotionally and financially, because they really did come out and support them with record attendance the last couple of years.
Do you do they have anyone in the minor leagues who can help them right now? And the reason why I say that, this is a team that's relied heavily on their minor leagues in the last few years and helped them win a World Series. Is there anyone that can help right now?
Offensively or pitching-wise?
Both.
Well, both. The prize jewel of the farm system right now, well, there's two of them. Raul Mondesi is the most athletically gifted, but he has struggled every time he's shown up at the big league level. So he'll certainly get another shot this year. He's got all the tools. I mean, he's lightning fast, terrific range, switch hitter, just hasn't been able to find his groove at the big league level yet. But and then there's a right-hander named Josh DeMott, who's not on the 40-man roster yet, but he's in AAA, and he'll definitely get a look eventually this year, too. He brings in about 100 to 101 miles an hour starter, is really having a terrific season at AAA Omaha right now. So he could be an answer down the road in terms of rotation.
Talking to you earlier, you seem really confident that the Royals can get back in this thing. And why do you feel that way? Is it because of the players, the manager, the general manager? Well, why do you feel that way?
Well, just because the core of this group that went to two straight World Series and won it all in 15 is still here, still intact, still hungry. When they were 10 games under a week and a half ago, and I think a lot of people left them for dead, they came back and won 6 out of 7. There's a character to this group, kind of a never say die attitude among them too. And I just think that they're not ready to pitch it in yet. They want to have they'd love to have one more parade, obviously, and you know we all know how hard that is to achieve. But I just think they're determined, and they understand that it's a very, very long season. We're not even at the quarter pole yet, and they're not panicking at all. They're 6 games under right now, but there's no sense of panic in that clubhouse. They feel like they've got a really good rotation. Jason Hamill obviously is struggling, but they've got a good rotation. The back end of their bullpen has been lights out lately. That's been kind of their formula over the years, is to have a shutdown bullpen and decent to good starting pitching. The only thing that's been holding them back this year is offensively, and that's shown some signs lately of picking up. So those are probably the main reasons.
Jeffrey Flanagan, listen, thank you so much for being on the show. Let's do it again.
Absolutely, Bill. I appreciate it.
Take care.